The wind came first, a low moan to the black-toothed pines that clawed at the edge of her clearing. Then came the rain, cold and sharp as needles, turning the path to her cottage into a river of mud. Ione huddled deeper into her threadbare cloak, one hand shielding the precious bundle of herbs she'd spent the afternoon gathering. This was her world, the salt-laced air, the shriek of the gulls, and a loneliness so profound it felt like a second skin. She was an exile. An Omega cast out to the farthest edge of the coastal territory, left to live or die in this forgotten shack her grandmother had once occupied. The pack wanted her gone, a ghost to haunt the cliffs. And mostly, she was happy to oblige. Something cut through the howl of the storm, a sound that didn't belong. Not the crash of waves against the rocks below, nor the groan of ancient timber. It was a raw, guttural sound of pain, animalistic, yet not. Her heart hammered against her ribs, every instinct, honed by years of being the lowest, the weakest, screamed at her to run, to bar her door and pretend she'd heard nothing. Nothing good ever came from noticing things you weren't supposed to. But another sound followed, a choked gasp, the sound of a living thing drowning in its own blood. She couldn't. She just couldn't leave it. Kindness was a currency she didn't have, but it was the only one she still knew how to spend. Ione followed the sound, her bare feet sinking into the cold muck. The forest was a thrashing, groaning entity around her, and then she saw him. A man, a mountain of a man, was sprawled at the base of a lightning-scarred oak. He was a ruin. His fine black tunic was shredded and soaked, a darker, sickening red. A deep gash ran from his shoulder to his ribs, and another marred his leg, the bone a pale, jagged slash against the darkness of his trousers. But it was his face that stole her breath, even slack, with pain. It was a face carved from granite and fury, framed by a mane of wet, black hair. She knew that face. Every wolf in the kingdom knew that face. It was stamped on coins, carved into the stone of the great hall. King Sorin, the Alpha of Alphas, and he was dying in her woods. Panic, cold and absolute, seized her. To be found with him, they would say she did this. An exiled Omega, a convenient scapegoat, they wouldn't ask questions. They would simply tear her apart. She had to run. Now forget him. He groaned again, a whisper of sound. His eyes, the color of a winter storm, flickered open. They held no recognition. Only a universe of agony, and then they slid shut. No. The word was a silent scream in her mind. She couldn't leave him, not because he was a king, but because he was a life flickering out in the mud. To walk away would be to kill the last good thing in herself. Her decision was madness. It was suicide, but it was hers. Getting him back to the cottage was a nightmare of straining muscles and desperate, gasping breaths. He was impossibly heavy, a dead weight of muscle and bone. She dragged him, inch by agonizing inch, his blood smearing a dark trail through the mud behind them. The rain washed it away almost as quickly as it fell. The cellar was her only option. No one ever went down there. It was damp and smelled of earth and potatoes, the only safe place. She managed to get him down the rickety wooden steps, his body thudding heavily onto the packed dirt floor. For a long moment, she stood over him, her chest heaving, rain and sweat plastering her thin tunic to her skin. The sheer insanity of what she'd done washed over her. She was hiding the Alpha King in her root cellar. The first day was a blur of fever and blood. She stripped away the ruined clothes, her hands trembling, as she saw the full extent of his injuries. The wounds were deep, vicious, not from a wolf, but from something edged. Silver, she realized, seeing the faint, dark burn around the flesh. A poison, she worked by the flickering light of a single tallow candle. She washed the wounds with boiled water and the harshest herbs she had, the ones for drawing out infection. She stitched the gash on his side with a needle and gut thread, her stitches small and neat, just as her grandmother had taught her. He never stirred, lost in a feverish haze, muttering words she couldn't understand. Names. A womanace. Name, whispered with a broken sort of reverence. And then another word, a snarl of self-loathing. A coward. She forced water between his cracked lips. Then a thin, bitter tea to fight the fever. She sat with him, her back against the cool stone wall, and listened to the storm rage outside, mirroring the one Shad brought into her home. The second day, the fever broke, his breathing evened out, the harsh, ragged gasps softening. His skin was still too pale, a waxy sheen under the candlelight, but the burning heat had subsided. He remained unconscious, his body locked in a desperate battle to heal. She crept upstairs to her own small cot, but sleep wouldn't come. Every creak of the cottage, every rustle in the woods, sent a jolt of terror through her. They would be looking for him, his royal guard, his trackers. They would scour the territories. Would they think to look here? At the shack of a disgraced Omega? Probably not. It was her only hope. On the third day, he woke up. She was changing the dressing on his leg when his eyes snapped open. They were no longer clouded with pain, but sharp, intelligent, and filled with a chilling intensity. They were the eyes of a predator. His hand shot out, impossibly fast for a wounded man, and clamped around her wrist. His grip was like iron. Hen? Oh, who are you? His voice was a raw rasp, a gravelly ruin of the commanding tone Chade heard in stories. Fear, sharp, and metallic, flooded her mouth. She tried to pull away, but his grip was unyielding. Ayani, she whispered. Ayai found you? Ku, his gaze swept the small, dark cellar, taking in the shelves of preserved vegetables, the dirt floor, and her, a trembling girl in a patched dress. Confusion warred with suspicion in his eyes. Where is this? Am I home, on the eastern cliffs? He processed that, his jaw tightening. The exiled lands. Why am I not in the Citadella's healing halls? The question hung between them, heavy and dangerous. She could have lied. She could have invented a story. But looking into those storm-gray eyes, she knew only the truth would serve. Because I brought you here, she said, her voice barely audible. Alone! His grip loosened slightly, but his eyes never left her face. He was reading her, searching for deceit. Poor, an Omega. It wasn't a question. He could scent it on her, the quiet submission that clung to her like her grandmother's old shawl. She flinched, but didn't deny it. A yes, an Omega found the Alpha King bleeding out in the woods and decided to drag him to her cellar instead of alerting the guard. He let out a harsh, disbelieving laugh that turned into a grimace of pain. Why? The question she'd been asking herself for 2 days. You were dying, she said simply. It was the only answer she had. He stared at her for a long time, the silence stretching until it was a physical thing. He was a king. He was used to lies, to plots, to people who wanted things from him. Her simple, impossible explanation didn't fit into his world. A veil be searching, he said, his voice flat. Oh, when they find me here with you, they will kill you. I know, she whispered. That, more than anything, seemed to break through his suspicion, the quiet acceptance of her fate. He finally released her wrist, his hand falling back to the rough blanket. He tried to push himself up, a growl of frustration rumbling in his chest as his body refused to obey. The effort left him pale and sweating. Stay still, she commanded, surprised by the firmness in her own voice. Ayuel, tear the stitches. He glared at her, a flash of the royal fury he was known for. But it was a fire banked by weakness. He sank back down, defeated. A water? He rasped. She brought it to him, holding the cup to his lips. His eyes watched her over the rim, analytical and cold. But she saw something else there, too. A flicker of vulnerability he couldn't hide. The great Alpha King, helpless in an Omaga's cellar. The dynamic was set. She was the caretaker, he the patient. An impossible, dangerous reversal of their worlds. The fourth day, he was strong enough to eat the thin broth she brought him. He ate in silence, his gaze fixed on her. It was unnerving, being watched so intently. He was like a caged wolf, all coiled power and simmering energy, even when broken. "Who did this to you?" she asked, her voice soft, his jaw clenched. "An enemies of the crown." The answer was curt, dismissive. A wall slamming down. She didn't push. Instead, she tended to his wounds as she had before. Her hands were gentle, her movements efficient. She worked with a quiet focus that seemed to calm the restless energy emanating from him. "You have a hilarious touch," he observed, his voice less harsh than before. "My grandmother taught me," she said, smoothing a fresh layer of salve onto the angry red skin of his shoulder. "She was the pack healer. Before, she trailed off, not wanting to speak of the shame, of the reason for their exile. Before what?" he prompted, his voice quiet but insistent. "Ione swallowed a before my sister Maris was born. She was a beta strong. My father he couldn't abide having an omega for his firstborn. My grandmother argued for me, so he cast us both out. She didn't know why she was telling him this. The words just came, spilling into the quiet intimacy of the cellar. She had never told anyone the whole story. Soren was silent for a long time. She could feel his eyes on her, but she didn't look up, focusing on tying the bandage. Your father is a fool," he said finally. The words were simple, stated as fact. A strange warmth bloomed in her chest. No one had ever defended her. Not once. She finished her work and stood to leave, suddenly shy. "A stay," he said. It wasn't a command. Not really. It was softer than that. "A request?" She hesitated, then sank to the floor, her back against the opposite wall. "Tell me about the herbs," he said, and so she did. She told him about willow bark for fevers, yarrow to stop bleeding, comfrey to knit bone. She spoke of the forest, the tides, the changing seasons on the coast. He listened, his eyes never leaving her face, and for the first time in years, Ione felt a scene. On the fifth day, the sound of hoofbeats thundered through the woods. Ionia's blood ran cold. She scrambled up the cellar steps, peering through a crack in the floorboards. Four members of the Royal Guard, their silver and black uniforms stark against the green of the forest. They were moving in a search pattern, getting closer. She flew back down the steps, her heart a frantic bird in her chest. Soren was already trying to sit up, his face a mask of grim determination. "They're here," she breathed, her voice tight with panic. I have to meet them," he said, gritting his teeth as he swung his legs over the side of the cot. Nah. The word was sharp, cutting. You can barely stand. If they see you like this, Weka, your enemies will see it too. They'll know the assassination attempt almost succeeded. He froze, his own ruthless logic turning against him. She was right. The Alpha King could not be seen as vulnerable. It would invite challenges, chaos. What do you suggest? He bit out, his helplessness making him angry. She said, her mind racing. Stay here. I'll send them away. He looked at her, at the fierce resolve in her eyes. This was no timid Omega. This was a woman of impossible courage. He gave a single, sharp nod. She covered the cellar door with an old rug and a stack of firewood, then went to her front door, schooling her features into a look of dull, placid submission. She opened it just as the lead guard was about to knock. Omega, he said, his tone dismissive. We are searching for the king. Have you seen anyone? Heard anything? She lowered her eyes, hunching her shoulders in the way she'd been taught, the way that made her invisible. No, Alpha. No one comes out this far. Just the sea and the wind. The guard scanned the pathetic little cottage, his gaze lingering on the neatly stacked firewood. His eyes narrowed. He could smell it, the faint, coppery tang of old blood, a scent only a wolf would catch. And beneath it, something else, The powerful, unmistakable scent of the king. He looked back at her, his suspicion a palpable force. Are you certain? Ionia's heart stopped. He knew. She forced herself to meet his eyes, letting a flicker of her own fear show. I cut my hand badly yesterday. Alpha chopping wood. It'd bled a lot. She held up her left hand, showing him a small, clean cut she'd made with her knife. Only moments before, it was a pathetic explanation. A lie. That would never hold. The guard took a step forward, his hand resting on the hilt of his sword. The air crackled with tension. This was it. It was over. Suddenly, a piercing scream ripped through the air from the direction of the village. It was followed by another, a cry of pure terror. The guard and his men spun around. Smoke was beginning to curl above the trees. A fire ago, the lead guard barked at his men. And now. He gave Ione one last hard look, a look that promised he wasn't finished with her. And then he too was gone, racing toward the village. Ione sagged against the doorframe, her legs threatening to give out. She slid to the floor, shaking uncontrollably. A diversion. But who? Why? She did not have to wonder, for long. That afternoon, a visitor arrived. Maris swept into the tiny cottage as if she owned it. Her fine wool cloak, a splash of vibrant blue against the drab brown of Ionia's world. She was beautiful, with their father's sharp features and a confidence that had always made Ione feel like a shadow. A sister, Maris said, her smile not reaching her cold eyes. I was so worried. I heard the Kinga's guard were out this way, causing trouble for my poor, helpless sibling. They were just passing through, Ione said, her voice tight. She stood trying to block the view of the rug and the firewood. Marisa's eyes flickered to the spot. A flicker so fast, Ione almost missed it. Still, it's a dangerous time. The king is missing, you know. Vanished 2 days ago. Some say he was attacked. Others say he simply ran, abandoned his throne. She leaned in, her voice dropping to a conspiratorial whisper. They say the council is already talking of a successor. Ice trickled down Ionia's spine. Maris was not just sharing gossip. She was probing. Testing. I would not know anything about that, Ione said, turning away to busy herself with the hearth. Of course not, Maris said smoothly. But you should be careful, Ione, living all alone out here. If something were to happen, no one would know. Her eyes landed on a small discarded piece of black fabric near the wood pulley scrap from Sorina's tunic that Ione had missed. Maris's smile widened, a sharp, predatory thing. It was good to see you, sister. Do take care. She swept out, leaving the scent of expensive perfume and cold dread in her wake. Ione went back to the cellar. Soren was on his feet, leaning against the wall, his face thunderous. He had heard everything. Your sister, he growled. She knows. I think so, Ione whispered, her body trembling. The fire that must have been her. A diversion to get the guards away from here, to give herself time. A time for what? To be sure, Ione said, a sickening certainty dawning on her. To make her own plans before she reveals what she knows. A.A. Soren pushed himself off the wall, his eyes blazing. I have to leave. Now, I am putting you in unbearable danger. You cannot, she insisted, stepping in front of him. You are not strong enough. You would collapse before you reach the tree line. I am the king, he roared, his frustration and fury boiling over. The power in his voice shook the very shelves, rattling the jars. And I am the one who stitched you back together. She shot back, her own fear making her bold. You will not throw that away. You will not throw my life away by being a stubborn fool. He stared at her, shocked into silence by her outburst. The little Omega, standing up to him. He saw the terror in her eyes, but she wasn't backing down. Protecting him. A strange, unfamiliar emotion, twisted in his gut, guilt, and something else. A fierce, protective surge that had nothing to do with his crown. 7 days, he said, his voice quiet now. Strained and Dean, I need to be strong enough to fight in 7 days. Can you do it? As she looked at his wounds, at the pallor still clinging to him, it was impossible, but she met his gaze and nodded. Ass. The 6th and 7th days were a desperate race against time. She fed him protein-rich fish from the cove, herbs to build his blood. She made him walk, pacing the small cellar to regain his strength. His hand braced on her shoulder. The physical contact was a constant low-grade shock to her system. The heat of his skin, the solid feel of his muscle under her hand. They talked more, the impending threat stripping away all pretense. He told her of the guilt that haunted him, a battle. Years ago, he had made a strategic choice, sacrificing a small battalion to save a city. It had won the war, but he still saw the faces of the men he had sent to their deaths in his dreams. It was a wound that had never healed, a poison in his soul, worse than any silver. She, in turn, told him of her loneliness, of a life spent being told she was worthless, a flaw in the bloodline. She spoke not with self-pity, but with a quiet dignity that he found more compelling than any display of strength. In the cramped, earthy darkness of the cellar, two broken souls began to see each other. The king saw not an Omega, but a woman of immense strength and compassion, and the woman saw not a king, but a man, drowning in the lonely burden of his power. On the morning of the 8th day, they came for him. It wasn't the royal guard. It was Maris, and with her, several members of the Pack Council, led by a hard-faced elder named Lorcan Aeonia. Maris's voice was filled with false panic. Thank the spirits. We came to check on you. Elder Lorcan was so concerned. Aeonia's blood turned to ice. It was a trap. Soren was upstairs, hidden in her tiny loft bedroom, a last desperate gamble. He was stronger, but not ready for a fight. Ashay's been acting so strangely, Maris was saying to Lorcan, her voice carrying into the cottage, a secretive, frightened. I think she's hiding something. They pushed their way inside. Lorcan's eyes swept the room, his nostrils flaring. He was a powerful alpha. He would scent the king immediately. His gaze locked on the ceiling. There is someone here, Lorcan growled. Before Ioni could speak, Soren dropped from the loft, landing silently on the balls of his feet. He was dressed in her grandfather's old clothes, too small for his massive frame. He held a piece of firewood like a club. He was pale and still moved stiffly, but his eyes were pure fire. A collective gasp went through the group. "Aye, Your Majesty," Lorcan breathed, his eyes wide with shock. Maris played her part to perfection. She screamed, pointing a trembling finger at Ioni. "She did this. The filthy Omega. She kidnapped him. She must have poisoned him, tortured him. Look at him. It was a brilliant, vicious lie. It explained his weakened state, his strange clothes, his presence in an exile's hut. It painted Ioni as a traitor, a monster. Seize her," Lorcan commanded, his face a mask of fury. Two guards lunged for Ioni. Soren moved to intercept them, but his weakened leg buckled. He roared in frustration as they grabbed her, twisting her arms behind her back. No, Soren snarled. She saved my life. The poison has clearly addled your mind. My King Bol, Lorcan said smoothly, stepping between them. We will deal with this traitor, and we will get you to the Citadel as healers. Maris rushed to Soren's side, feigning concern. Your Majesty, you are safe now. Let us help you. It was a coup. A quiet, perfectly executed coup. They weren't just taking Ioni. They were taking control of the king, using his weakness against him. They dragged Ioni from the cottage, her pleas lost in the wind. Soren, surrounded and still not at his full strength, could only watch, his face a portrait of helpless rage. They threw her into the village's holding cell, a cold stone pit that smelled of fear and damp. The villain had won. Maris had successfully framed her, removed her, and gained control of the narrative. Now, with the king a rescuer and under her influence, she could consolidate her power. Ioni sat on the cold floor, despair a heavy cloak. She had tried to do the right thing, and it had cost her everything. They would execute her. And Sorin would be a prisoner in his own court, his word against the counselors, his weakness, a weapon they would use to control him. Hours later, the cell door creaked open. It was Maris. "I did it have to be this way," she said, looking down at Ione with something that might have been pity, if it were not laced with so much triumph. "Our father always favored you, you know. Even after he sent you away, he saw some strength in you he never saw in me. He called you a resilient high? I hated that word." "Why are you doing this, Maris?" Ione asked, her voice hoarse. "Because this is my chance," Maris said, her voice dropping. "With the king in my debt, with the council listening to me, I will have a power you could never dream of. And all I have to do is erase UHE, she smiled. "They've found a witness, a young boy from the village. He's going to testify that he saw you dragging the king into your cottage, that you threatened his family if he spoke a word." Aeonia's heart clenched and innocent. "They were using a child. You monster. Am a survivor," Maris corrected. "Just like you. The trial is tomorrow. Enjoy your last night." The trial was a farce, a public spectacle held in the village square. Ione stood on a wooden platform, her hands bound. The pack surrounded her, their faces a mixture of anger and morbid curiosity. Sorin was there, seated beside Lorcan, looking every bit the captive king. His face was like stone, but his eyes, when they met hers, were blazing with a silent, desperate promise. Maris brought forth the little boy, Timo. He was small for his age, with wide, terrified eyes. He looked at Ione, then at Maris, and began to recite his memorized lines, his voice trembling. He spoke of threats, of seeing Ione cackling over the Kinga's unconscious body. The crowd growled, their anger rising. "This Omega is a traitor to the crown and a danger to us all," Alorcan declared, his voice booming across the square. "She has consorted with the Kinga's enemies. The penalty is death." Sorna's voice cut through the noise. He stood, shaking off Maris's restraining hand. He was still unsteady, but his royal presence was undeniable. "Every word of this is a lie. Ione is innocent. She saved me." "Your majesty, you are unwell," Lorcan said, his voice full of false sympathy. "You don't know what you're saying. I know that I love her," Sorin said, his voice dropping but carrying with absolute clarity. The words fell into a stunned silence. His gaze found Ionia's, a raw, desperate confession. "I love her, and I will not let you harm her." It was a declaration of war and a death sentence. To love was to be seen as weak, compromised. Lorcan smiled. This was better than he could have hoped. "The king's mind is clearly broken," Lorcan announced. "He is unfit to rule. For the good of the pack, I am assuming regency. My first act is to carry out this sentence." He drew his sword, its silver edge gleaming in the cold light. He advanced on Ione. Sorin roared and lunged, but two guards intercepted him, wrestling him back. He fought with the strength of a lion, but his body was not ready. He was still too weak. He could only watch in horror as Lorcan raised the sword over Enya's head. Time seemed to slow down. Ione looked at Sorin at the anguish on his face. He had confessed his love for her, knowing it would cost him his crown, maybe his life. He was fighting for her. Something inside her broke. Not despair, a dam. A wall that had held back an ocean for her entire life. She thought of her grandmother, of the stories she used to whisper about their bloodline, about a power that slept in the veins of the firstborn daughters. A power their father had feared and tried to suppress by casting her out. She would not let Sorina's sacrifice be for nothing. She would not die like this. As Lorcan's sword began its descent, she lifted her head and opened her mouth, but it was not a scream that came out. It was a single, resonant note of pure power. Light erupted from her, a wave of golden energy blinding and warm, that pulsed outwards from her body. It was not a destructive force. It was a wave of truth. Lorcan was thrown back, not by a physical blow, but by the sheer weight of his own deceit made manifest. The sword clattered from his numb fingers. The guards holding Soren stumbled, their own minor falsehoods and petty cruelties rising up to choke them. Every wolf in the square felt it. They felt Ionia's innocence, her terror, her courage. They felt the cold, calculating ambition of Lorcan and the venomous jealousy of Maris. They saw the truth of the little boy, Timo, and the threats that had been made against his family. The lies were burned away like fog in the morning sun, leaving only the stark, undeniable truth. The light faded, leaving Ione standing on the platform, her bonds burned away to ash. She was breathing heavily, the power a wild humming thing under her skin. She had never felt so alive. The crowd was silent, their faces a mixture of awe and shame. Soren was the first to move. He walked to her, his steps no longer unsteady. He looked at her, not with shock, but with a deep, profound recognition, as if he were seeing something he had always known was there. He dropped to one knee before her, in front of the entire pack. He took her hand, his head bowed. "Am I queen?" he said, his voice thick with emotion. The words sealed it. He wasn't claiming her, he was acknowledging her. "Her worth." She reached down, her fingers trembling, and cupped his jaw, lifting his face to hers. The self-doubt that had been her constant companion for 20 years finally, blessedly broke. She deserved this. She deserved him. He rose, his hands framing her face, and kissed her. It was not a kiss of passion, but of homecoming, of two halves finding their whole in the wreckage. It was a promise made before the silent, watching eyes of their people. Maris tried to flee in the chaos, but the pack, their eyes now clear, turned on her. They surrounded her, their faces grim. Her fate would be decided by the woman she tried to destroy. 3 months later, the coastal territory was no longer a place of exile. It was the site of the new royal court. Soren had abandoned the cold, stone citadel of his ancestors, choosing instead to build their future here, by the wild, honest sea that had brought them together. Ione stood on the balcony of their new home, a beautiful structure of timber and glass that overlooked the cove. The sea breeze was cool on her face. She wore a simple gown of deep blue, the color of the ocean at dusk. She was no longer the invisible Omega. She was the Luna Queen, her bloodline ability, now a known and respected power in the kingdom. She had chosen mercy for Maris, exiling her to a remote northern convent. A punishment of quiet reflection rather than brutal vengeance, strong arms wrapped around her from behind, and a familiar warmth pressed against her back. Soren rested his chin on her shoulder, his breath warm against her ear. "What are you thinking about?" he asked, his voice a low rumble. "The cellar," she admitted, a small smile playing on her lips. "Ah, how cold it was. How terrified I was. And yet, you were the bravest person I had ever met," he murmured, pressing a kiss to her temple. The guilt was still there in his eyes sometimes, but it no longer consumed him. They were healing it together, day by day. He had confessed his past to the entire pack, taking responsibility for his choices. His vulnerability had made them love him more, not less. "Wasn't it brave?" she said. "Was just a doing what was right." "That," he said, turning her in his arms to face him, "ud's the very definition of bravery." He looked at her, his storm gray eyes soft with a love so deep it still sometimes stole her breath. "You saved me, Ione. Not just from the assassins, you saved me from myself." "And you," she whispered, her hand coming up to rest over his heart. "Saw me when no one else did. It was the truth of their story. A mutual rescue." He had given her a crown, a place, a name, but she had given him back his soul. They were a king and queen, forged not in power, but in vulnerability. Their new world built on the foundation of a secret, kept for 7 days in a dark, earthen cellar. And as they looked out at the endless expanse of the sea, they knew their greatest adventures were still to come.